This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
12:02, back on the Fan. Time for the King Topic of the Day here with BT and Sal, Brandon Tierney, Sal the Cotter Show. Back to these phones in a minute. Obviously, Jets and Giants quarterback draft stuff. Let's focus to our New York Knicks. As I told you the other day, I'm just in a very weird spot with this team. I'm in a weird spot because I feel like I know who they are, and I don't feel like that's going to change. And that's a very uninspiring position to be in, quite frankly, that I'm very rarely in as a fan. Forget about what I do for a living. I can't get excited about the Knicks right now, even with the impending return of Mitchell Robinson. Yeah, I know Karl Anthony Towns didn't play last night. Yeah, I love Jalen Brunson. Love him throwing up some late daggers, get the win. Better than losing. I understand that. But there's just too much evidence, guys. Yeah, it's not the first week where I had some observations. Many of you thought it was too early. Or around Christmas. Maybe I'm jumping the gun a bit. Even January. And Saturday's March 1st. And what we know about these Knicks is they're good. They're a good team. What I also fear to myself to know about the Knicks is that they're just not good enough to do anything of significance this year. And I think what's, and I got to get over this. Like, I got to snap out of this. I don't know how I'm going to. Well, I mean, I guess one way would be Mitch comeback, Karl Anthony Towns to not look hobbled as he's looked far too often this year. And, you know, maybe you start Mitch, not right away, but eventually when he gets his cardio up and he got, you know, Cat at the four slaying people, Mitch doing his thing, defense gets better. And then everybody else gets better. And then with Josh Hart coming off the bench, which is what I would do if you actually put Mitch at the five and Karl Anthony Towns at the four, stay OG, stay Bridges, and stay Brunson at the point, obviously. Now, you know, theoretically, maybe the starting five improves. It's certainly going to be different, and it should improve, at least in one facet. And then, as a result, residually, the second unit begins to take a little more shape with Josh Hart playing with the second unit. It doesn't mean Josh Hart can't close out games. You don't want Mitch on the court. Obviously, a horrendous free throw shooter, a liability. Maybe that's going to get me going. But I've just seen too much. I hope. I really do. I admit, I do not like where I am as a Knicks fan. I am very rarely here. I mean, you're listening to somebody who used to watch the Knicks when, you know, Keith Van Horn was like the highlight. And there was really just simply nothing to latch on to, except hope, except you love basketball. All right, and I love him, but all right, we'll see Jamal Crawford jack up 30 shots tonight, or all right, yay, Nate Robinson won the slam dunk contest again. Fantastic. Maybe Eddie Curry loses the 30 pounds and he becomes a dominant center. Like, it was always about, you know, what, maybe, if, could be, contingency, possibly. What if Quentin Richardson becomes the sniper they thought he was when they got him and his back is healthy? And it just sucks that for me, I'm just not solely for me. Like, it sucks being in this spot. I don't like where I'm at. The Knicks are the 3 seed, and the Knicks are good. I should feel different. I admit that, but I don't. because I am a realist. And every time the Knicks play a good team, they get absolutely punked. Not even like by five or, I mean, they get throttled and thrashed where they are unrecognizable. And it's just, I can't forget about that. That's ingrained in my mind here. That's a big problem, you know? And I think that of all the things, and, you know, listen, I could throw some stats at you, whatever, the average loss to the Celtics, 21 points. Yeah, all right. I gave you this one the other day. When the Knicks play a, let me get this right. When the Knicks play a top 10 offensively efficient NBA team, so not just the Celts and the Cavs, but other ones too, the Knicks defense is 29th in efficiency. What does that mean? It means they can't stop remotely good offenses. They are inept against good offenses. It's going to change a little bit with Mitch, but I can hit you with those numbers. And I could try to add some context here. Just has a bit of fun season. It's been a deflating season. I mean, I was going to say disappointing. That's too easy. And I wonder if I'm alone. I don't think I am. You know, I'm not trying to convert anybody. If you're extracting the same amount of enjoyment out of this season, no, if you're honest with yourself, I don't believe that you are, as last season. Good for you. Maybe you're tougher than me as a Knicks fan. You're more resilient. You skew a little more optimistically. But I'll tell you, like, one thing that I really don't think that I am, and I don't know that it's a source of pride. It's just who I am, and I guess when I look at it, I'm a little prideful. I'm not a pessimist. I don't think anybody wants to listen to a pessimist for 4 hours a day. Was it interesting to me when I was an avid listener of the station as a non-FAN employee? And I can't imagine with all that's going on in the world, listening to somebody complain and be negative for 4 hours a day is something that you're running to the radio to zap on. You probably want to zap it off. So I don't want to be that guy. But while I'm not a pessimist, I think why it's been a deflating season is because in my mind, and again, I wish I don't do this either, but I can't help it based on what the Knicks have done. Trade-wise, I can't evaluate this season without having it bleed into next season. You know? Like, do I think that Karl Anthony Towns becomes a better defender? No, I don't. He's not. I mean, I know the answer is no. And do I think Jalen Brunson, who I love him. But do I think Jalen Brunson becomes a better? No, there's no chance. He's too small and he's too non-athletic. Relative to the NBA, to be even a competent defender. So there's a lot of issues with the Knicks. From a roster perspective, I think Evan said this the other day, and he's absolutely right. Their two undeniably best players are substandard defensively. You cannot have that. You can't. Think about the Knicks championship teams. Now, I didn't see them, of course, just like I didn't see the Jets championship team. But those Knicks teams... Number one, they were very selfless. And I think this Knicks team is fairly selfless. I think they're tight. I think they're connected. I don't think they're just jacking up bad shots. But those Knicks teams that, you know, are up in the rafters of the Garden, who was their best player? I mean, some years it was Willis Reed. Some years it was Clyde Frazier. Clyde Frazier was a ball hawk on defense. I mean, 6'5" point guard back then. Great defender with quick hands and great anticipation. Willis Reed, tough rebounder. Good defender. Those were the two best players. I know Pearl was there for the second championship, whatever. I won't get too in the weeds of something that happened 50 years ago. So that's a problem. And then the other problem, which I think weighs down my energy for the Knicks big picture, is that I don't know what they can do to change that this offseason. They can't do anything in season. Trade deadline's over. Can't do anything on the buyout market of significance because, as we've talked about, if you make over $12.5 million based on these stupid financial rules at the end, I still don't understand. Aprons, whatever. You know, I understand the thresholds, of course, but the aprons. They're like, the Knicks can't even get somebody who's bought out if he's making more than $12.5 million this year. Can't even do that. So those guys will go to the Cavs and the Celtics and the Thunder and whatever. So... And then the offseason, what do you do? Do you have any first-round picks? So I don't want to be that negative dude with the Knicks. I love the Knicks. Love. I just don't feel this group. And I've said it for a while, and that is where I'm at. And last night's win does nothing to change that. Matter of fact, it probably reinforces it a bit more because they barely won against an awful team. 888-808-1019. It's BT and Sound on the Fan. All right, let me connect to my Nick brethren here. Benny's in Brooklyn. Ben, what's happening, bud? How you feeling today? Am I off base?
I think a little bit. I'm feeling real awful about the game last night. I mean, Jalen Brunson is the king. So, like, you know, there's really no not. That's kind of what made me make the call. Like, Jalen Brunson's not the problem here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're not entirely off base, but, like, I don't love the comparison to, like, the Willis Reed, Clyde Frazier year. Like, they're not playing the same sport, man.
Hold on, Benny. I'll let you finish. No, it's definitely a totally different game. There's no doubt. The three-point line wasn't even around back then. A multitude of differences. But the spirit of what I said is transferable from George Mikan to now. Like, if your best players, he was like the first great big, for those who don't know, and 1946, that's why I say him. If your best players in the NBA aren't at least slightly above average defenders, what are we doing? Where are we going?
I mean, you're not wrong. Like, I see where you're getting at. I guess, and this is, you know, I've been a Knicks fan my whole life. I'm 27 years old. I've seen, you know, the bottom of the barrel with these Knicks teams.
Yep.
And I keep coming back to Mitch, and that's a really bad play to keep coming back to. If he can come back and even in 20, 25 minutes a night be a competent rim protector, and then you move, like you were saying, you know, Josh Hart to the bench, and then the bench unit is Hart and Deuce and Precious.
Yep.
I think that makes us better, but I think the unfortunate reality is we're just not there with the Celtics, the Cavs, the Thunder, honestly.
They're not. I mean, and the evidence is there. That's not an opinion. That's a fact at this point. I mean, they're 0-7, and they're not losing by 2, 3, 4 points. They're getting just absolutely run out of the gym. Yeah. You know, I'm going to bring up the name DJ LeMahieu for a second, and I'm going to get back to these calls here. We're going to talk some Knicks for a while, really get into the Knick lab here. So I'm not banking on DJ LeMahieu. I think he's physically broken, unfortunately. A really good hitter and a proud baseball player. You know, low-maintenance guy. I think he's physically cooked. Not counting on him. I don't think he's going to do anything. And if he does, I'd be stunned. I'm not counting on anything from him. All right? The similarities in terms of breaking down with Mitch and DJ are pretty obvious. The difference, though, with the Yankees and the Knicks of value, I'm not saying the Yankees won the championship. I don't think they're a World Series team right now either. But baseball's different, number one. And number two, Yankees aren't banking on DJ LeMahieu to change the fortunes of their season. They're going to roll the dice because they owe him a few bucks. And if they can catch lightning in the bottom, or they get it 290 and put the ball in play, whatever, then it's a win. You are banking when you, like the first call referenced Mitch. And I get it. Knicks fans are banking on Mitchell Robinson to change everything about the season's possibilities. And that's not a good thing. That doesn't make me feel good. That's comforting. It's terrifying. Let me get Matty in Bridgeport. Matt, BT and Sound on the Fan. What's up, Matt?
BT, how we doing? I think a lot of this, and I could be wrong here, is twofold. Obviously, we've gotten our behinds kicked by top teams. Obviously, that's a fact, no doubt about it.
Yep.
I also can't help but wonder, as fans, is how we grew up, is a style that we like. Undoubtedly, not necessarily what you can measure in toughness has been taken away from the team. The DiVincenzos, the Hartenstein, the Mitch hasn't come back. There's no doubt about that whatsoever. It's not to say that Bridges and those guys aren't tough, whatever, however you measure that. Mm-hmm. But I think that ultimately, you know, all of us, quite frankly, fell in love with the way that we played last year, right? The grinding nature.
Yes.
You come to us, if you're going to come in the lane, you know, you're going to do. And we don't, obviously, right now have that. However, we also have to look at it from a factual standpoint. Mathematically, record-wise, we are a better team than we were last year. That's just where we are right now, of course. I think that, quite frankly, if I said to you this time last year at the beginning of the year, we'd have a whatever it is, 655, 670 winning percentage. We got a good chance to win over 50 games without Mitch having played the vast majority of the season.
Yep.
You probably would have taken it, because the reality is that would have put us right in that 2 or 3 spot. Obviously, Cleveland's been a lot better.
Okay, but hold on a second, Matt. I would have asked a follow-up question. All right, does the team look like a championship contender? And the answer is no.
Well, based on what they've done, undoubtedly based on the fact that they've gotten their butts whipped against those teams, you can't say that they are.
Uh-huh.
I just think that we fell in love with something. And the reality is like, if you look at Boston, obviously a great team won the title last year. They don't necessarily have that intimidating force. Porzingis isn't the guy you're not going to fear coming in the middle. We don't have that right now, and we've adapted our style of play probably more so to the new NBA style, mm-hmm. and I think it's taken us a while to just either get on board with it. I mean, we're talking like the season's over. We know that it's not. We're just let down a little bit with what we've seen, because the reality is our record is still pretty darn good.
I know.
That's a fact.
Well, hold on. Go back to Boston. Who's their best defensive player? Who's their top two defensive players?
Well, you're going to say Holiday, undoubtedly a really good defensive on-ball guard.
And Jaylen Brown.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
So Jaylen Brown's one of their top two players and absolutely one of their top two defenders. And Tatum's one of the best players in the NBA and a much better defender. I know they play different positions than Brunson and Karl Anthony Towns, which is my point. Part of my point. Not my entire point. Good call, Maddie. I'm not saying you're wrong on all that stuff. Good call. But, I wish I saw more. I just don't see it. Let me get John and Lyndhurst. John, BT and Sal. Take it away, John.
Hey, BT, know, I used to listen to ESPN radio, and now with the whole switch, I really come to enjoy your show. But I just have to say, this is such a weird take.
Why?
You know, like you said, you've been a Knicks fan for so long. We've been so bad. We are the third best team in the East right now.
Yep.
And the other thing that drives me insane is the narrative that, like, the last few years, the regular season doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Why did the Knicks try so hard in the regular season? And then in the postseason, it doesn't matter.
Oh, well, I don't say that. But keep going. I don't say that.
I'm not saying you. I'm saying in general.
Okay.
People like to downplay the regular season. So now all of a sudden the Knicks aren't playing the best regular season basketball. Because look what happened to us last year. We beat the bricks off the Cavs. We beat the bricks off the Sixers. But we were hurt. We were also hurt the whole time. So now we get Mitchell Robinson, who comes back after the All-Star break, who will have time to get ramp up and get ready.
Uh-huh.
By the time he's ramped up and ready, it'd be the playoffs.
I know.
I think we're jumping the gun on saying this team's not good enough. Look at OKC last night. They struggled against the worst Brooklyn. That was a freaking G League team out there, man.
Yeah.
And they struggled against them.
I know. Listen. Yeah, I think the Thunder get a little more of the benefit of the doubt at this point for me. I think they're just better. But I hear you. I mean, listen, I think it's nuts. And I said this to you on Monday. I think it's nuts because the Celtics game I don't want to hear about a comeback. This team's way past that. I'm not giving out platitudes or roses for a team that, instead of, being down by 27, which they were, and losing by 30, they find a way to scrape it back and make it a little bit more competitive. Did you win or did you lose, dude? So I was pretty into the Knicks on Monday. We spent a lot of time on them a couple of days ago. But there are certain situations that you have to evaluate in the NBA regular season at a very high level. Now, there's not many of them because there's a lot of games and there's a lot of travel. And I think the league is borderline broken. I think there's a lot of disinterest amongst the players. I think they're getting lazy with the money that they're making. I think the game stinks. It's a three-point. I can't. The NBA, I've said this. I don't need to get back into the rant. Just go find that. I think Adam Silver's an awful commissioner, and I think the NBA is awful. It's the worst I've ever seen in my life. So that's okay if I was still enjoying the Knicks, and I'm not even enjoying the way they're playing. But there are, 6, 8, 9, 10-ish games that I circle every year for teams that I think are contenders. And not just as a Knicks fan. I did this for the Warriors back in the day. I'm doing it for the Cavaliers this year. Because you can't evaluate every night because of the reason I just mentioned. And when I look at the circle marks around the Knicks, there's nothing that they've not once answered the bell. Not once. And I think what bothered me the most... All right, you get whacked on opening night. You just got Karl Anthony Towns a few weeks before that. Whatever. And then go, I didn't like it. Didn't look great. It was a little deflating. I didn't go nuts. But you gave up, what did they give up? 142 to the Cavs? 140? Whatever the hell it was. They got their asses smoked. And then they come out on a Friday night. Then they come out in the first quarter on national TV against the other team that has repeatedly smoked them this season. And after what, it's 39-18? And I'm supposed to be positive? I like to be positive. I like to be real. And I like to be right. Now, I hope I'm wrong with this. But there's nothing in my soul that says I will be. And I'm at a very odd place as a Knicks fan. Don't like what I've seen all year. And I think if many of you are saying that you're okay with it, honestly, I think you're fooling yourself. Or you just don't know basketball. And you're okay with, or there's three, or, which I know you know basketball, so I mean it for a few of you, not many of you, because I know you know hoops. Or you lean on this, which bothers me. I mean, come on, think about how bleak it's been this century. I mean, with a three seed, we're going to win 50 games. Isn't that good enough? No.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3, plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy!
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almacead. Almacead is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almacead. Find out more and see the university studies at almacead.com. That's almased.com.
No, it's not. No, it's not. Not when you make a move that's supposed to elevate you to championship status, which they are nowhere near. Big Wendy's guy. Hoff is an even bigger Wendy's guy. We both love it.
Right.
He absolutely goes nuts with it. Now, I'm going to power up next hour my top 5 sneakers. You want to do a little power up? What, your top 5 Wendy's meals?
No doubt. Power up with Wendy's.
All right.
Number 5, sausage, egg, and cheese on a biscuit.
Money.
Fantastic.
You know what that's great for, by the way? I know you could relate to this. You bang one of those out, you're taking one of your boys to an early Saturday or Sunday game.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You get that little coffee. Oh,
let's
here
go.
We go.
Number four, the spicy chicken sandwich.
I'm not as spicy as you are.
Dude, I love the spiciness, man. They kill it with that, so that's phenomenal. Number three, it's funny because my kids love these, the honey barbecue saucy nugs. I don't know if they just like to say saucy nugs, but they love the honey barbecue saucy nugs. Number two, the vanilla frosty. Now, you can go chocolate frosty. You can go, we're talking about the Girl Scout cookie frosty they got, but I'm a vanilla frosty.
The thin mint one, right?
The thin mint. Oh, my goodness. I actually need to go try that. And then number one, Baconator. I mean, that's just a, come on, classic.
Oh, my God. I'm hungry again. We've got to change when I do these Wendy's reads. It's every day at 12:30, and this is when I'm getting hungry.
Yeah, well, you know what?
Yeah.
We'll place an order, and we'll get some Wendy's in the house.
All right, let's do it, man. There you go. I like it. BT and Sound on the Fan, and I will do the top five sneakers at the Power Up. I got some old ones. I got one fairly new one that might surprise you, but a lot of old ones. I think you guys will love it. So before we get back to these Nick calls, which is what we're doing now, and Ian Begley joins me next here on the show. Great NBA, great Knicks guy, SNY. Yankees starting lineup. I'll just give you the first couple. Jazz back in a leadoff spot. Jazz, Volpe, 2. No Judge yet, as you know. Dominguez, 3. Ben Rice, 4. Then you get into the Pereiras, the Oswaldo Cabrera, Spencer Jones playing a little bit. Alex Jackson, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I mean, you know, listen, those are pretty much four or five names that will be not exactly front and center on opening day. But, you know, it seems like they're, I think, and me and Sal got into this even as far, you know, like a month ago we started kicking this around. But who should lead off for the Yankees? And it was generally, and you know, we had Boone in, and we talked about this with Boone, and he kind of said he likes maybe Dominguez's profile there as a leadoff hitter, and we didn't disagree. Obviously, Volpe's in the conversation, but Jazz is now getting some run as a leadoff hitter. And I'm not going to say I don't like it, because Jazz definitely brings some pop and speed and swag to the leadoff spot. I feel like I like him more in the five hole or so, but I got to see where some of the other pieces are going to fit. I don't know exactly where Goldschmidt's going to hit yet. I don't know what they're going to do with DH without Stanton. So I feel like Dominguez or Volpe better at the one spot for now, but they're running him out there a lot, so they want to see as the leadoff hitter. Back to the Knicks stuff. Let me get Danny in Mystic, Connecticut. Dan, go ahead, buddy. What's happening?
How you doing? Thanks for taking my call. Okay. I want you to know I love your show.
Thank you.
Listen to it every day.
Thanks, man.
Real quick point, and I agree with everything you're saying about the Knicks. I understand. I've been a fan since 1960 and Howie Komarz, so okay. I go back away.
All right.
But, you know, it took the Celtics 7 years with Tatum to win a championship. They didn't win it the first year they got Tatum. So it's a work in progress. I think it took Denver like 5 years with Jokic or something to win. It takes time. And I agree with everything you're saying. You're not wrong what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't it didn't happen yesterday with the Celtics or last year.
It's true.
7 years with Tatum.
Yeah.
So it takes time to do these things, you know?
I understand that.
It's a work in progress. It's better than it was 5 years ago. That's what I know.
Well, you see, but I know that, and that's where you lose me a little. I think the other stuff you said is spot on. I'm not unrealistic with this. Like, yeah, I mean, the Yankees and the Mets should be in the mix for a championship this year. No, the Giants and the Jets should not be in the mix for a championship this year. The Nets should not be in the mix for the championship this year. The Rangers should be. I just don't know what the hell happened to them. You know, I think that it's specific to each team, and I don't think it's unrealistic to think that the Knicks are supposed to be a championship team. I know what you mean. Like, I get the concept of it takes time. Yeah, Jason Tatum was, what, third overall pick? I think he was 3. And he was 19 years of age when he came in. So, yeah, it took a while, but he was drafted at 19. Knicks traded for Karl Anthony Towns when he's 30. And he's a big-bodied, big man. So, you know, who knows how many years of his prime he has left. So I get it, but I don't fully agree. How about Andrew up in Westchester? What's happening, Andrew? Andrew. All right, we got to zap you, buddy. Hey, guys, you got to turn the radio off for just get a better reception. Timmy up in Albany, Tim?
Hey, BT, I want to talk a little Knicks.
Okay.
I was actually at the Boston game last weekend, and just like you, I'm, you know, disgusted by what they've done against these good teams. It's bad. But I do want to say, I think something we need to keep in mind is, in the playoffs, it is a different game. I want to see what this looks like in the playoffs in a series. I know that maybe that's wishful thinking on my part, but let's say they play Boston and they lose in 5. Then we know, yeah, we're more than one player away. But maybe what if they push them to 7? You got to remember, guys like Hart and OG, their value is more important in the playoffs because the game gets tighter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it could be a big difference in the playoffs. The game is tighter.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
no,
if the Knicks get into a series and lose in seven, you might not think of those regular season losses the same way, because maybe you would think then, oh, we're right there, we just need one more piece or something like that.
Yeah, that would definitely change my opinion. I would be fair to the Knicks. Thanks for the call, Tim. That's a different perspective. Yeah, like, I'm assuming, just based on the evidence I've been presented with so far, that a series between the Knicks and the Cavaliers wouldn't be incredibly competitive based on the way these teams look when they play each other. Now, Tim is saying, well, let's not give the Knicks a win, but let's push this forward with a deep competitive series. Yeah, that would certainly change my tune. That would open up windows of possibilities for me in a very optimistic manner. I'd be excited. I mean, you know, you lose game seven to the Celtics or the Cavaliers here. I'm not getting on the air, you know, pumped up happy. You know, like last year, I remember starting the show when they got knocked out to the Pacers, where they lost to the Pacers, and it was like one of appreciation. I'm like, how am I getting on the air and ripping this team? Like, how am I going to lambaste the Knicks when, you know, OG's, you know, hamstring basically comes off the bone and Jalen Brunson's been limping around with a bad wrist and with a bad ankle, with a bad wrist as well. Mitchell Robinson's out. How the hell am I going to do that and be fair to a team that I respect? I'm not doing that. And if you go back, you actually see the video. I stood up for like, yeah, I just kind of messing around a little bit, but kind of like a fake standing ovation. Like, guys, I appreciate the effort, expecting that it would go in the natural direction of incrementally getting better. Instead, it's gotten worse. 888-808-1019. We're going to power up because it's on the rundown at 1240. That's my bad, though. I've got to adjust. Hoff put it at 1240. We made some adjustments. Ian Begley next. Right, Hoff? Ian? Talk some Knicks with him. Power up next hour as well. BT and Sal on The Fan. All right, BT and Sal back here on The Fan. We're going to do this as the BT and Sal call today, brought to you by Volvo Cars Ramsey. Finding the Volvo you want is easy at Volvo Cars Ramsey. And by Edison Heating and Cooling, New Jersey's heating experts. And that is as we welcome in Ian Begley, SNY NBA Insider, host of The Putback, which is their digital show as well on SNY. Begs, we had you a couple of weeks back. Sal is off today, so I'm going solo. What's going on, buddy? How you been?
I'm good, BT. How are you, man?
I'm frustrated. You know, I'm frustrated. I'm a little confused. I'm a little disappointed. Got some strange emotions going on, but I don't think I'm wrong, which is what stinks. I cannot. Now, I don't need you for psychological evaluation, but maybe I do. You can guide me here. I love that team a year ago. I understand the reasons and the limitations. Hartenstein couldn't be retained, and I know that you had to trade Dante and Randall to get Karl Anthony Towns here. But the soul of this team is different. And I don't know how it improves to the point where, one, it feels like last year, but more importantly, two, they can actually win a championship.
You know, BT, what I could say is the locker room last year was phenomenal. And I'm not talking about just like when the media is in there for pregame, postgame. Just guys would talk about how, you know, they could joke around all the time, and then they knew when it was time to be serious, to get down to business, and there was a togetherness that was there that, frankly, I haven't seen yet from this group. And I'm not basing that, again, on being in the locker room and hanging around. It's more so just having conversations with people. And I think, yeah, the togetherness, the chemistry, it's not there this year as it was last year. And I think you see that on the floor at times with this group.
Which is weird because they imported another Villanova kid. Now, I know they lost one there, but you bring in Bridges there. So really, I mean, Karl Anthony Towns seems to have a pretty good personality. I'm not in the locker room.
Yes.
You are. Yeah, he seems to be, you know, approachable, affable. And I'm sure Bridges is a good young man, but I don't know. He doesn't seem to have a lot of juice. And I'm not just talking about, you know, some of the strange games he's had shooting the ball. I think he's been maybe a little overly criticized, in my opinion. But I guess I'm just going to ask you, is he a dog? Is he the kind of player that goes on the road, game five, game six, pivotal spot, whatever, and shows up and steps up? Is he that kind of guy? I don't know.
Look, in Phoenix, they loved him. He was more of a 3-and-D guy then, but he made big plays on a team that, you know, went to the finals. And so he was there in Brooklyn. You saw, I think he was miscast as a number one guy for an offense. And then here he's back to a, you know, a number three role. And I think his reputation is such that he can do that. And he is a guy who is capable of that. I think, you know, just based on what we've seen this year, I think he's still maybe getting comfortable in that role. Obviously shot the ball really well last night against Philly early on. But I just think, you know, defensively, it's not where I think the expectation was, and it's unfair to blame one player. There's five guys on the floor.
Yeah.
We don't know the defensive schemes when we see somebody maybe get burned or not contest the shot. But just in general, the defense has been so poor so often this year. And I look at OG and I look at Mikhail, and those, that's the strength of those two guys. And that's why you pay those guys, you trade the picks for those guys, and it just hasn't worked on the defensive end. And, you know, you have to look at Bridges a little bit, in my opinion, there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Talk to Ian Begley. Begs, of course, SNY NBA insider, host of the Putback, SNY's digital NBA show. Ian, what kind of job do you think Tom Thibodeau's doing this year?
You know, you can talk about, like, you know, recently it was McBride should have been playing more than Precious when they were dealing with the injuries. And you can talk about in-game adjustments, adjusting the rotation. That's all fair game. But I think just in a big picture sense, he's gotten you to a place where you haven't been in so long that the game-to-game stuff certainly matters. But if you look big picture, look where you are, look where he's taking you. Now, look, if they flame out first round and it's a big disappointment, there's certainly going to be conversations about his job security, because that's the nature of the beast. Mm-hmm. But to me, you know, getting on him late February when you're, what, 16 games over 500, it's more so the nature of this fan base, understandably, you know, wants to win, desperate to win, and it's less so kind of like a realistic evaluation of an NBA head coach.
Well, hold on. Let me push back on that. Let me stand up for the great, you know, new, and I know you're not disparaging them, but I got a little bit of a different opinion for these great New York basketball fans. So I don't think Tom Thibodeau's doing a really good job this year. I don't, okay? And and I like Tom Thibodeau, but the regression against the elite teams is unacceptable. The performance against, like, average teams to me is alarming. Like, if you really look at this year, the Knicks have beat up on trash, and they've even allowed, forget about the Celtics and the Cavs, they've even allowed, like, slightly above average teams, like the Pistons, who are at least a little better than they've been, to waltz into the Garden, win not one, but twice. I also look at a coach, when you lose and you give up 140 on a Friday to the Cavs, and on national TV, you're not ready to play the first quarter of the game, you give up basically 40 points. I'm not saying it's all Tom Thibodeau's fault, but to me, partly, I got to drop some of that blame at his doorstep. So if I had to grade Tom Thibodeau, I would say right now for me, this year, and I like him, but this year, C+. I don't like what I've seen. And Ian, I'll take it a step further. You say if, like, they were to flame out in the first round, I'm of the mindset, based on what they were supposed to be and all the other stuff that we've talked about a million times with the five first-round picks, what else could they do? If they were to lose a second-round series and it's not competitive, I'm moving on. Me.
Look, there's nothing you said there that I would strongly disagree with. There's certainly elements of this season, the ones that you mentioned, that you can put partially on the head coach. Yeah, he's not perfect. The thing that I'll never understand, regardless of how it's explained to me, is having your key players in a game that's pretty much been decided in the closing minutes of a game. To me, you're playing with fire. I'll never get that. And if he does get burned in that scenario, it's going to be a disaster. But by and large, like, look, I look at it as, is the coach connected to the locker room? Is he connected to the best players in the team? Because to me, that's where it starts in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And the answer for Thibodeau is he is. And look, that doesn't excuse or explain why they've struggled against these top teams, why they were not prepared for that Boston game. That's still at the fault of Thibodeau partially. But in a big picture sense, he's still connected to that locker room. He's connected to that front office. And I don't know, I just see that as valuable, especially for a franchise that has not had stability for so long. Now you have it, and things may go left a little bit in the spring, but I don't know if that's a reason to shake the apple cart in that way. We'll see how it plays out. You know, maybe the top of the top there, Jim Dolan, and everybody disagrees, but I don't think Tom Thibodeau deserves to be let go or under a great amount of scrutiny unless things go incredibly sideways.
That's Ian Begley, SNY NBA Insider. He's got the digital show as well. It's called The Putback. BT and Sal here on The Fan. Why in the world did he put Karl Anthony Towns back in that game the other day when he went back to the locker room?
That's what I was just talking about, BT. That's part of what happens day to day, game to game. I'll never understand it. I don't know, like, however you want to explain it publicly. Karl Towns said he wanted to go back in. That's fine. Don't you have to protect him, though?
Yes.
In that instance?
Yep.
And so, yeah, I'll never understand that again. Playing with fire there. And if you happen to get burned, like there was an instance a couple years back where R.J. Barrett turned his ankle late in one of these games, you know, it's going to be an issue, and it's not going to bode well for Tom Thibodeau. So I don't understand why it happens. He's got his reasons. The players don't seem to complain about it. So it seems to be just a media fan frustration.
Topic.
Which
yeah.
To me, is very valid. But look, it's risky. It's risky, and I don't know. I don't have an answer there.
I got you.
You don't have a good one.
Well, you didn't do it, so you shouldn't have the answer. I just want your opinion. Good job on that. When do you think Mitch suits up for the first time?
I think you get him this weekend. Wouldn't be, I guess I don't want to say wouldn't be stunned, but I think Friday, at least to my knowledge, is a possibility. As of earlier this week. So for him, it's like, how do you feel when you wake up after these practices, these workouts? He had a full practice Tuesday. Tom Thibodeau said that he felt good yesterday, the day after that practice. So I would think you're going to see him this weekend. If it's not Friday, it's Sunday against Miami.
Are you of the mindset that, you know, he's got to shed the rust and in cardio, he's got to get that up to speed if he stays healthy and he gets to that point? You think he starts and you have Cat at the four? Is that something that happens for the playoffs, you think?
Look, if he gets back to 90% of where he was pre-injury, you have to take a hard look at it, and they will take a hard look at it. And, I could see it working. And look, if it's clear that they're having success with that lineup, Tom Thibodeau would change the starting lineup. I don't think he'd hesitate to do it. In this hypothetical, I do think they would, but you're talking about a lot for Mitchell Robinson here. So much time off, the foot injury, you're not doing a ton of cardio. So I think it's going to take a little while here for him to get to that point.
Yeah.
But they want to take a long look at Towns, Robinson, those lineups. They're going to certainly give it a run here once he gets back on the floor.
You know, this is more of an open-ended, broader down the road question. And maybe this is part of my frustration here. How do you think Karl Anthony Towns is going to age?
Year 10.
You know what I'm saying? Just
had,
looks a
had
little.
Some injuries.
Little.
He's had some injuries. I mean, I think that it's hard for me to assess just not being around him that much before this season. But he's not heavy. He's not heavy, and he doesn't. He uses his body a lot, but he's not like a Charles Oakley type where he's operating with reckless abandon. So I think you couple all that with the idea that shot's not going anywhere anytime soon. I think he would age. I think he'll age pretty well.
I just think he's, and again, listen, of course, I watched him at Kentucky. I watched him, All-Star games, some T-Wolf games, not every night, obviously, like now. It just looks like he's laboring to get up and down the court. And that's why I push it to 32, 33. And I don't want to say that's the direct source of my consternation here, but I don't know what else, and this is a deeper issue for the summer or whatever, but I don't know how much, I know they don't have much flexibility. Is there anything that they can do that would resemble a big move? I don't mean get rid of Towns, but add to this core to make them better for the next couple of years, or is that it? They fired all the first round bullets with Bridges.
You know, there's a nuclear option, obviously, if things go way south, that, you move one of the OG or Bridges or move a big contract like that to make a major move, but that's nuclear and unlikely, I think. But if you're talking about, you know, bolstering the bench and something of that nature, you're going to have to trade a Miles McBride, I think, to get something back that's of value. And do you want to do that?
I guess
it depends on who's available. Yeah. Or you trade a Mitchell Robinson and something else, and then you get something back. So you're going to have to sacrifice a lot. Obviously, the draft capital is gone. So it's either nuclear or you're losing a rotation player. And, you know, it's going to be difficult because you also have that second apron. You can be above it, but you don't want to be above it for too long because it's onerous from a tax perspective. So it's tricky. There are avenues, but there's not an obvious easy one.
Yeah, no, there's not. And just to clean this up, I've mentioned it a few times. I know you get into the weeds on this. So if there is a buyout that would, in theory, be attractive, like if he's making over, what, $12.5 million, the Knicks can't sign him, right? Something like that?
That's right. Before I answer the question, if you're driving right now, pull over. I don't want anybody to fall asleep. But yes, you cannot sign somebody who had that it is at $12.5 million, roughly.
Yeah.
The Knicks can't sign that guy if he gets bought out. Underneath that, you can, but they're also right under that second apron, right? And they're coming up on a date here, and I think it's tomorrow, technically, where they have enough room under the second apron to add a veteran minimum deal. And I would expect them to do that, maybe not tomorrow, if not tomorrow, you know, over the weekend or over the next few days. And look, TJ Warren is a guy who was with them in camp, played at the G League at 31, had a good season down there. I think he's going to get consideration. Chuma Ekeke is another guy who's going to get consideration for that 15th spot. But yeah, if you're looking at a big money player who gets bought out, the Knicks do not, or are prohibited, I should say, from signing that kind of player.
And because I'm not exactly sure, do the Cavaliers and the Celtics and the Thunder have that wiggle room, or are they limited as well? Do you know?
I believe Celtics for sure. The Cavs, I would have to check.
Okay.
But I would assume so, just based on the salaries that they have, that they would have the same limitations.
I got you. Hey, one more for you. I love this. Love talking shop. I've always been a fan of yours. You know, even back in the day, Ian Begley, SNY, NBA Insider, host of the Putback, SNY's digital show. Are you a believer that, because you've seen this whispered, not too loud yet, but it's getting a little more traction. Are you believing that maybe the some of the stars on this team are a little too immersed in the podcast world and maybe a little less eye on the prize oriented, or you think that's unfair?
Look, I love Kendrick Perkins. It's a strong take that he gave. You look at Paul George last night. He cracked 20 points for the first time in a while after he said he was taking a podcast break. So maybe there's something to it. Yeah. But, you know, just talking to people around it, I don't think this is taking anything away from their jobs here. I don't think this is at all a kind of distraction, like the stuff gets scheduled around the like, let's say this, Brandon. You see a podcast come out tomorrow or right after that game against Philadelphia. You know, they weren't interviewing the person a day before. They interviewed him probably a couple of weeks earlier.
Yes.
So it's all kind of scheduled out around basketball. I don't see it taken away from basketball. I understand the premise. And I think we're all going to miss Paul George's podcast, quite frankly. but I don't think it's an issue here in New York for these two guys.
I agree. I think that was a ridiculous take by Perk. I was totally off base, unfair. All right, man. Hey, listen, if you get bored with these Knicks, jump on the Johnny's train. Let's go.
Oh, I like your Johnny's. Yeah. I love everything that's happening there, man. It's going to be a fun march. Thanks to Rick and the boys. I'm looking forward to it. And BT, it's always great to be with you, man. Appreciate you having me on.
It was a good chat, man. I think Knicks fans enjoyed it. Thanks, Ian. I'll talk to you soon, buddy. There he is, Ian Begley, NBA insider for SNY, host of the Putback, SNY's digital NBA show. I will get back to the call. This show went fast. We only have an hour here.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.